Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean. All right, glad you're with us. Wow, what a news day this is. It's really incredible. And what's even more incredible is how off topic the people that work in the so-called news business are. I mean, this is now bordering on a psychotic collective meltdown by the Destroy Trump media. We just had, I stayed up till 4:30 last night watching the coverage. Ed Henry was covering for Fox News when, in fact, the three hostages landed on American soil, and the president met them, and Mike Pompeo was there, and I couldn't stop watching it. I couldn't stop paying attention to it. I couldn't tell you how. Well, that's political, Hannity. You just want it because it's Donald Trump. No, I'm happy. Anybody that saw what happened to Otto Warmbier knows what the potential that existed here for these three fellow Americans of ours. I'm so proud of our country that we're able to actually do something really good. You know, we do talk a lot about how every life matters. Why are you making that face, Linda, that says, oh, my gosh? Just tell me, what is it? Go ahead.
I'm just looking at this thing on Twitter, horrible thing.
Oh, that I showed you. Yeah, I know. Well, it's pretty crazy. Social media today is off the hook. But for you to have such a visible reaction, can you please stop with the visible reactions? Because it stops the flow of my monologues. Very distracting. Anyway, but you think about where we've come. You know, Hillary Clinton was on The View. It wasn't really that long ago. I'll play it later in the program. And there's Hillary, you know, this, by the way, was in September, you know, saying Trump's tweets on North Korea are not useful. And it was sort of like the media left-wing Destroy Trump complex that had this meltdown starting at about 10 p.m. on Election Day 2016, their psychosis has gotten worse and worse and worse. You know, we've got three televisions in front of me every day. I've got five computers in front of me every day. And I look up and I see what everybody's covering, et cetera, et cetera. And all day long on fake news, CNN, all day long on conspiracy TV, MSNBC. You know what they're talking about? They're not talking about the hostages. They're not admitting that they were wrong when a lot of their commentators were predicting Donald Trump's going to start a nuclear war with North Korea because he's calling Kim Jong-un little rocket man. You know, they were predicting the worst. Hillary saying he needs to shut up. He's not useful. Because I really think they all believe the same thing here. They couldn't believe that Donald Trump was a serious candidate. They couldn't believe he won the nomination. They never thought that he would defeat Hillary Clinton. They all thought he was going to lose. They all had a collective shock. And frankly, between the deep state and people in the highest levels of power and the nefarious activities that we have been exposing, where do you find out what we've got today? A great piece by Sarah Carter. And the media just every day trying to delegitimize and destroy him. And a special counsel that is off the rails, unhinged, as the judge pointed out Friday and another judge pointed out on Saturday. And now we're learning today from Sarah Carter that the former FBI director Comey was, well, consulting with Robert Mueller on his Russian testimony. Talk about an appearance of impropriety. Was it collusion about the testimony that he gave to the Senate committee back in the day? Because that's something lawyers ought to do. If there's any discussions or questions at that point, before you give a testimony before Congress, James Comey's not supposed to coordinate with the special counsel's office. I never saw a bigger beatdown than what we saw last week with Judge Ellis in the Manafort case. Oh, really? Let's see. You're interested in a tax case from 2005 to 2007, and it has nothing to do with Russia? It has to do with the Ukraine? And that was investigated by the Justice Department, and basically they cherry-picked out the files of that case, which, by the way, I'm sure were put to bed a long time ago. That's what nobody else is really telling you. The Justice, this was not an active case of the Justice Department. They did it because, as the judge, Judge Ellis III, rightly pointed out, that the whole purpose was it wasn't about Russia-Trump collusion. It was to get Manafort, to put the screws to Manafort, so hopefully Manafort sings against Donald Trump. And he warned about singing becoming composing, and composing referring to subornation or perjury to protect oneself. And the judge saying this has nothing to do with the mandate. And the dates are problematic in that case because Manafort's home was, remember, the early morning raid, guns drawn, 6 a.m., typical Andrew Weissman tactic, you know, to intimidate. And, of course, leak it to the media. You know, and then go out there, go in this guy's home, his wife and him are sleeping. You know, all they had to do was call the attorney and say, yeah, we're outside the door. Can you please open the door? And there's nothing that Paul Manafort and his wife would be able to do at 6 a.m. Oh, let me quick erase my computer. I'll be right there. I promise. Let me hang on. Hillary, what's the name of that stuff Hillary used? Hang on. Let me see if I can order it on. Oh, Bleach Bit. Yeah, these, you know, all the same characters involved in covering up for her crimes and her obstruction, her violation of the Espionage Act, rigging that investigation. I can't believe the times we're living in, but it's like a collective meltdown. So we have hostages released, the very, very same people that said Trump's going to start a nuclear war. No. Where are we with Little Rocket Man? No more rockets are being fired. He promised he wouldn't. So far, he's kept his promise. We saw three hostages released last night in the wee hours of the morning, and the president met them on the tarmac at Joint Base Andrews. We saw Mike Pence there. We saw Mike Pompeo. What a great guy. What a great Secretary of State. Pretty amazing. I was so happy for our country.
Did you hear there were no pallets of cash?
Yeah, I did. The fake news tweet that you handed me yesterday.
It's still funny today.
It actually is. No pallets of cash. I think Trump actually tweeted something similar. I have his tweets here somewhere. We'll find them. But think about this. Nobody thought that the Kim Jong-un was going to cross over the DMZ into the arms of the South Korean president. You know, we have a shot. I don't know what the end result is going to be. I think we're going to bring our show to Singapore, though. We're going to go. I want to go. And I think we're going to go there, do radio and TV there for a couple of days. This is so historic. I don't know what the result's going to be, but we're talking about denuclearization of the entire Korean peninsula. And lo and behold, let's see, Donald Trump didn't drop $150 billion in cash and other currencies in cargo planes to, like, the mullahs in Iran or Kim Jong-un, or bribe Kim Jong-un like Clinton bribed Kim Jong-un's father. You know, just amazing times. Let me give you another example. You know, this is why I love Israel. I've said this. I don't want American kids to take this the wrong way. It's really just a matter of circumstances more than anything else. But I've spent so much time with these young people. When do you go? You have to serve in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, 18.
They have to serve 2 years.
2 years.
And they serve.
I think it's 2.5 now.
Is it?
I think so.
I mean, I've met many of the IDF soldiers. They were actually here visiting us over the Christmas holiday.
Right, and I've met a ton of them. But the reality is, if you grow up in Israel and you're surrounded by enemies and your whole country could fit in the state of New Jersey in terms of landmass, and all your life you've had threats of rockets being shot over your country, shot into your country. Everybody knows somebody. You've had nothing but threats of war your whole entire life. your parents, your grandparents tell you about, you know, they'll tell you the history of the formation, the U.N. partition plan of 48, the 67 war, the 73 war, you know, and Israel has a reality or a roots in reality that we don't have to have. So it kind of, we put our guard down. They don't have the luxury of putting their guard down. And when Prime Minister Netanyahu showed the world with one of the biggest intelligence coups in our lifetime, it was so amazing that, yeah, Iran's been lying to us the whole time, the world, and we've been fed another line of BS by the mullahs in Iran, and then the president rightfully withdrew from the deal. I mean, it's something that we've got to learn here. We've got to learn from these moments in history. We got to learn that Neville Chamberlain took the wrong approach during World War II and didn't understand the nature of the threat of Nazism and fascism.
The settlement.
I won't play it now. I played that yesterday. And we got to learn that Ronald Reagan, referring to the former Soviet Union as an evil empire, was the right thing to do, and that he didn't have to fire a shot and say, Mr. Gorbachev, if you really want to tear down this wall. He was right. Jimmy Carter was weak. Bill Clinton was weak. You know, the media, unless you're bowing on your hand and knee to a dictator and kissing their ring, somehow they don't think it's possible to have peace. Unless you're bribing, murdering dictators or radical Islamic mullahs in the case of Tehran. You know they abuse women in Tehran? Do you know that they kill gays and lesbians in Tehran? Do you know that Christians and Jews, if you're discovered, you're persecuted and put in jail in Tehran? Why would you give people with that mindset, the great champions on the left of human rights, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, why would you give those people any money, release any money, give taxpayer money? Why would you ever do that? And then we found out, yeah, in spite of all the promises that they weren't going to have nuclear weapons, yeah, well, they would have them anyway. And a ballistic missile program to deliver them. All right, we got a lot to get to today. You know, I actually did some research last night. In the aftermath of 9/11, I have a lot of names of Democrats that actually loved enhanced interrogation. I know now they're sanctimoniously beating up a woman who's a real hero. I think she's a hero. Gina Haspel. Wow, she actually blew the doors off those people yesterday. It was amazing. We have the Democrats, you know, they keep talking about this blue wave for 2018. No, that's not going to happen either. We got Sarah Carter on how the former FBI director Comey was colluding and consulting with Mueller and coordinating with Mueller before his testimony. No big deal. Only matters if you're on Donald Trump's team. Only matters if you like Donald Trump. We'll get to all of that. And yeah, we'll talk about how great that was, the release of these hostages. And by the way, our prayers have been answered. And the only prayer I want to send out to is Otto Warmbier's family. And I know they're happy for these families because I know somebody that spoke to them. And I know that they wish they had the same result. We know that just shows how dangerous this was for these three Americans. All right, 800-941-SHAWN. So we should send our thoughts and prayers to them today. Because I'm sure, I mean, and I know they're happy for these families because they know what it's like to suffer. I will tell you what is fascinating. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball yet. And every election season, I am always extraordinarily cautious as it relates to making predictions on a lot of things because circumstances change. I mean, if you think about the 2016 election, how many weeks before the election was the Access Hollywood tape dropped just before? It was like the Friday or the Thursday before the second debate, and everybody was predicting, that's it. He's done. He's finished. Linda was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, yeah, this isn't good. There's nobody that thought that was good. And the president showed up at that debate, gave an honest answer. Sorry, apologize, locker room talk. It was wrong. And, you know, and I remember saying at the time, all right, does everybody want their worst moment or their with their friends moment or their alone moment? You know, it's sort of like do you want it on tape and revealed to the world? Nope. And I think the American people know that deep in their hearts, nobody wants their tape out. That when they have something stupid. And if you're going to tell me that nobody's, that if there are people out in this world that don't say stupid stuff or things that they would never say publicly, and I guess in this day and age, you have to assume everything's going to be public. If you don't admit to that, you're just lying, because I don't believe you. I think everybody has said stupid stuff. You want to use a biblical reference, all have sinned and fallen short. And I just thought that the answer was believable and honest. And is that the way we want? Do we teach our kids to talk? No. Do our kids talk in ways we don't like? Yeah. I have a 19-year-old and I have a 16-year-old. And I can tell you already, there's been many a discussion on all these issues. Kids aren't perfect. Anyway, CNN's poll is now showing that the blue wave midterm Democratic advantage is almost all gone. Now, they didn't put up a memo yet like Reuters did this week saying, oh, no, we don't believe our own numbers. This has to be an outlier. After all, just 50% of American independents love Trump. That has to be wrong. Anyway, the Democratic advantage in the generic ballot dipped from 16 points in February to 6 points in March. Well, now it's just 3 points. And let me tell you who's saving the Republican Party from themselves. Well, by the way, the rescission that they did this week on that omnibus bill, that was a huge, huge play by the president. And Republicans went along with it because they didn't do it on the omnibus. They didn't repeal and replace yet, but they did get rid of the employer mandate. That was good. The tax cuts are taking hold. Look what's happening on foreign policy. We're now on a path to energy independence. We're on our way to 4 million jobs created. We have fewer people on food stamps than ever. Record low unemployment in 14 states, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and women. Oh, he's helping the Republicans. Yeah, that guy in the White House that sometimes says things you don't like. Oh, no, a friend of mine just got a bad diagnosis. All right, I got to call him in the break. Remind me, 800-941-SHAWN, not that bad. It just, you know, I hate medicine. I hate, you know, all my life I've gone to see people in hospitals. If I ever have to get in a hospital, you better lock down the windows because I'm jumping. I can't stand those places. No, I'm not literally, but you know what I mean? They're horrible. I mean, my mother-in-law was in there recently for a while, and I obviously went to go see her a lot. Sweet baby James was in for a while. You know, the funniest thing about going to see him, I sat with him on a Saturday night for like 4 or 5 hours. True story. He didn't remember. They had him all jacked up on whatever they had him jacked up on, some drip of whatever. And he goes, oh, you came? I'm like, James, I sat there the entire time. Now, there was something breaking news-wise. You were actually, I was telling you, I remember what it was, actually. We were being attacked over something, and you and I were texting about it.
I actually called you when I talked to James on your phone.
You talked to him.
And your sister was there, too, and I was talking to James.
By the way, I love my sister to death, but because she's a nurse, oh, she's like,
well, all you hear is her in the background. Now, listen, did you check this? Now, listen.
I'd almost be like, please, you know, I'm changing my views on assisted suicide. Nurse, please. She's driving me nuts.
Oh, you better hope she's not listening.
No, my sister's like, well, you can't be in a hospital without me or some other nurse there to double check everybody.
She's right.
And she, to the point where the good nurses that know their job, you know, literally.
We're not talking about them.
Well, I will tell you this. So my mother-in-law was at Sloan Kettering. And I've got to tell you, I went to see her, and I was very impressed with the people that worked there. I was a little obnoxious at one point.
You were? I'm stunned to hear this.
All right, here's the problem.
What's the problem?
So my doctor says anytime I've got a little whatever that I'm worried about, I do research. We do research for a living.
Okay, take it easy, first of all, WebMD. That's not research.
Okay, so, well, my doctor, and I'll say, well, I read this, and he goes, stop referring to Dr. Google. Dr. Google doesn't know what I know. And he really gets pissed. if I mentioned that I looked it up. And he goes, yeah, well, go look up the side effects for Advil and the side effects of acetaminophen, Tylenol, and the side effects of this. And
it's like any drug commercial that you watch, right?
Oh, yeah.
Any single one you watch, we will cure you.
No. But please be known that this may cause dizziness, bleeding.
You may die of a heart attack. If this happens,
may have a
please
heart attack
have someone
and
call 911.
Yeah, but don't call. But otherwise, it's a good drug. And
otherwise, it's going to clear up your acne. 1, 2, 3.
You know, one of the best lines Donald Trump ever used on medicine, he said, you know, if you're at the end of your life and you want to try something new, why don't we let people try something new? I mean, if somebody wants to, why? I know people that go to, like, you know, foreign countries just to try an experimental drug because they want to give it a shot because there's been some hope there. I have a friend of mine in Georgia that he actually went to, it wasn't Sweden, maybe Norway.
P.S. Your sister is listening and you are totally busted, so you better apologize on air.
Is she really listening?
She's listening. She heard what you said. She just texted us.
Oh, no. Teddy's listening.
You're sorry, Teddy. Those are the next words out of your mouth.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that yet.
You better say it.
Okay. So my sister, if anyone's in the hospital, God bless her, she goes. But she drives the nurses nuts.
Is this an apology? Because it sounds really bad.
No, I am afraid that one day I'm going to be in a hospital in a position I can't throw her out.
You should be afraid of when you go home tonight and she sees you.
Well, she doesn't live in my house. So.
She lives close enough.
By the way, I have enough security at my house. She doesn't know how to get through it. I can change the code on my phone, which is an amazing.
Just apologize, you stubborn mule.
Listen, the person that I grew up closest with are my sisters. I know. Trust me, I love my sister. She was mean to me growing up. She did beat me up a lot growing up because she was older and I was just, I had three older sisters. I'm not forgetting that part, so now I never let her forget it. Now that
you're not apologizing to her for a rite of passage.
Why are you interrupting the Sean Hannity show with these needs for apologies?
I'm just a friend helping a friend in need.
Let's be clear. You're criticizing her because she would want to make sure that a nurse did not do the wrong thing to you.
Let me tell you right now, I am never going to be a good patient, ever. I will never be a good compliant patient, and I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. It's the second that I think I'm ready to leave that hospital, I don't give a flying rip what they say. Those wires are coming out of me, and I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm not going to sit there. They keep you forever.
Well, that spot in the woods won't last forever. You got to get there.
Well, I do believe that when it's if I know for sure it's over and I have time to think about it, yeah, I would like to bring my family together. We'll have a reading of the will. From my lips directly, we'll film it in case anybody wants to ever challenge it, because I never thought I'd have any money. So, you know, I've saved it all, but, you know, except what I give away. And I would then say to my family goodbye. And I'd go to an unknown location. And I would, you know, and then when I died, they'd be told, and here are my burial instructions. I want a Hannity's America above ground. What do you call that thing? A mausoleum. That's what I want. And I wanted to say Hannity's America. That's it. Hannity fought for America in his own way. Spoke in the wheel. I'll put that on. Just one little spoke in the wheel.
The forgotten man is forgotten no more.
You know what? We'll take the forgotten man picture and put it
in
the mausoleum.
I'll hang it on the mausoleum.
I'd love that. Yeah, that'd be cool.
When you go into the woods, will you tweet for like the last 24 hours of your life to just get everything out that you've held back?
Well, no, I think the book that I should write at the end of my career is everything I wanted to tell you but knew would get me fired.
So now James is joining the conversation on text.
I'm getting the text. They're
and James
in.
Says that you're right.
Yeah.
So clearly he doesn't want to sleep in bed tonight.
James says, I'm with Sean. Thank you, James.
James, enjoy the couch. Get some extra blankets, my friend.
Well, we should put James on because James did not remember the 5 hours I spent with him. If I would have known, I would have just not gone, and I would have said I was there for 5 hours. What are you talking about? But he did think he did remember me talking about one thing that made me think, okay, he remembered at least a little bit. He remembered that I showed up a little bit. Oh, man, I am. Oh, I am so dead. I love my sister, Teddy. But she is a nurse, and she doesn't let anyone go to the hospital, you know, by themselves. And she'll stay there forever. Anyway, what were we talking about? I got so much news to get to.
Oh, there's a call on the line for you. I think you may have to stay on this topic a hair longer.
Oh, come on. Who is it? Yeah, hello?
Hey, Sean.
You know, sweet baby,
you really
James.
You better your sister.
You didn't even remember when you were in the hospital. I sat there 5 freaking hours, and then when you got out, I said, well, you know, I remember we did this and this. You're like, you didn't even remember I went.
I know. I was really touched that you showed up, but you're right. It all, you had to reconstruct for me later what had happened. I was gonna listen. They pump you full of stuff here in a daze. You don't really know what's going on.
I figured it out, but the interesting thing is you carried yourself. Your conversations were lucid. I couldn't tell. You seemed perfectly normal to me.
So. Well, that's me. I can always.
All right, is my sister there wanting to yell at me or what?
Yeah. Should I put her on?
Yeah, put her on. I'll tell a great radio story about my sister in a second here.
Hey, buddy. Is it showtime?
All right, everybody. Not everybody in the world knows you call me buddy like I'm a dog. Hey, buddy. Hey, bud. Bud, come here, bud.
All right.
So my sister, when I started when I was in my 20s, I didn't tell why you. Can I tell? You know, you should host the show. Why am I hosting the show?
You know what? I've often asked that same question.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, when I started in radio at this college radio station that ran me out of town because I was horrible.
On a rail.
Yeah, I deserved it. But during that show, not many people called in. So I would say to my sister, now, don't forget to call the show. And like I'd say, and then after, you know, a few minutes, if nobody else calls, I want you to call back and just use a different voice. And go ahead. Do your horrible British accent for everybody.
Bilingual. I became bilingual.
No. It was like a New York, hello, how are you? How you doing? Hello. It was hilarious.
It worked, buddy.
All right. Oh, God, now everyone's going to... All right, enough. You're ruining my life. You are absolutely ruining my life today.
Stay well, Sean. Your MMA is going to, you know, keep you in good shape, and you need it because I don't want to see you in a hospital. Trust me.
By the way, don't you love reading about your little brother all the time, that I'm a horrible human being?
I don't believe it. Not at all. All right.
When we started back in the day, you never thought this was going to happen, did you? Oh, man.
I never really thought about it, to be honest.
Yeah, me either.
Right.
Me either. That's the funny part. All right. Well, I love everybody. You know that.
Stay
goodbye.
Well. I know. Bye.
She drives me nuts. Drives me
I kind of like that during the call she was keeping you to task. Well, get back to your show. Shouldn't you be working?
She calls me some days at 2 minutes to three, and I'm like... I got a radio show, or 5 to 9. I'm like, I'd love to chat. I really want it. And he's like, well, I'm looking at the house. I really think we need to make some improvements. And I'm like, make them about the house. I don't care about the improvements of the house. No. But there's different options. You can do the big tank that costs this much and the little tank that does this much. Or we can bury the tank and pay that much. But I think that's way too much. And I'm like, bury the tank. Bury it. Pick the best option. Whatever the guy recommends. Oh, it drives me nuts. People think I've lost my mind here. All right, so the former FBI director is consulting with Mueller on Russian testimony. Wow. You know, where is the mainstream media? You know what the mainstream media cares about today? Stormy Daniels. That's all they care about. You know, all they care about. I mean, they might as well give that attorney guy, whatever his name, a show of his own. And he's on. And I just saw a Breitbart piece. Fake news CNN is down. Well, we were number one for the quarter. Thank you all very much. We're number one in April. And thanks to this audience, we're number one in so far in May. And we're not doing what they do. And we've been right and they've been wrong. You know, and look at where we are. Now CNN's poll, following up on the Reuters poll, is now showing that, in fact, the Democratic blue wave may not be happening at all because there's only a 3-point advantage for the Democrats now. There was a 16-point advantage in February. Now, there's still a long time to go before we get to Election Day. You know, I think the biggest bombshell this week that nobody's paying attention to, 91% of network news coverage about Donald Trump is negative. 91%. And with that and this witch hunt going on, look at what this president has encountered. And the other thing that we're discovering, I think this is big news too, is the Russia collusion trial is on. And it looks like the first casualty is Robert Mueller, because you have this Russian company, Concord Management and Consulting. They entered a not guilty plea in federal court in the case of the special counsel against these 13 Russian nationals and three Russian companies, and they're saying we're not guilty. Now Robert Mueller's probably going to have to withdraw the indictments because Robert Mueller put show indictments up. What, are we going to hand over to the Russians confidential? They have a right to discovery. Are we going to hand over to them confidential U.S. government information that proves that they were using Russian bots? I mean, I love the story. It came out a while ago. It was trending. You know, why do I think my name has now become clickbait? Because I'm in every story, even when I'm not. I'm not Jennifer Aniston. Look at me. I'm chubby, and I got white hair.
You're not chubby.
Just a little in the stomach area. I'm working on it. I work out every day. You know, this story is hilarious. Russian-linked Facebook post targeted fans of Hannity. Black Lives Matter. Okay, why am I in the headline? Because it goes on to say that, well, some of the groups listed include fans of Fox News primetime personalities like Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, Black Lives Matter, The Huffington Post, Black Voice readers, veterans, conservative Christians, people who like being strongly patriotic, the LGBTQ community. One ad released, it's everybody. Well, that was the warning that Devin Nunes gave in the Washington Times in 2014. We've known about this. But, of course, 2 weeks before the election, Barack Obama was saying, stop whining, Donald Trump, as if any serious person would ever think the Russians could or anybody could impact our elections. Yeah, well, they all hacked into Hillary's email server in the mom and pop bathroom closet. I'm sure it was the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Iranians, and God knows how many other countries. You know, that's why when WikiLeaks said it wasn't Russia, who knows? It could have been anybody. Because everybody hacked into that stupid server in the bathroom closet, apparently, and got all the emails. The only ones who can't find it now are the people that covered for Hillary. Everybody else has it. And you ever wonder why they never asked Julian Assange where he got the info from if they really wanted to find out if it was Trump-Russia collusion? Maybe they don't want the answer because they know, because even James Comey wrote that at least 5 or 6 foreign intelligence agencies hacked into that bathroom closet server, the one where she deleted the subpoenaed 33,000 emails and acid washed the hard drive. Nobody knew about Bleachbit until Hillary Clinton. I never heard of the thing. Bleachbit. I don't even know what it is. I still don't know what it is. Just know it's an acid washer of your computer. I don't know. I mean, I can understand breaking up an old device because you don't want anyone to have your old stuff, but that's the only thing that's, but like 10 of them? Now, and if it's under subpoena, then it's called obstruction.
Bob Mueller, you knew him. He must have briefed you when you were a member of Congress. He's a Marine. He's a lifelong Republican. Do you think he can be trusted? Do you think he's a bad guy?
You know, our administration has been fully cooperating with the special counsel.
Do you think his investigation is a hoax?
And will continue to. What I think is that it's been about a year since this investigation began. Our administration has provided over 1 million documents. We've fully cooperated in it. And in the interest of the country, I think it's time to wrap it up. And I would very respectfully encourage the special counsel and his team to bring their work to completion.
All right, that, of course, the Vice President, Mike Pence, saying it's time for Mueller to wrap up. Yeah, you think? Maybe it's time? We got to see what happens. We have a new breakthrough article today by our own Sarah Carter, investigative reporter. Headline, former FBI Director Comey consulted with Mueller on Russian testimony. All right, now maybe that's not a crime, but look at the nature of this relationship. It was Comey who purposely leaked the information, which may end up being a crime in and of itself. And then, of course, they're best friends, and it was for the purpose of getting a special counsel. It ends up being Mueller. And what we see here is Comey is getting special treatment from Mueller and clearly is coordinating his anti-Trump testimony with Mueller, which I think shows and proves what we've been saying all along, is that Mueller looks abusively biased and unfair. We have already known that. He's only appointed Democrats to this whatever you want to call it, this merry band of Democratic donors and unethical human beings like Andrew Weissman. You know, look at what happened last Friday in the Manafort case as Exhibit A. There are some of us that are getting what's going on here. and that is the biggest abuse of power scandal in the history of the country, abusing FISA courts by lying to them and not telling the FISA courts that they didn't vet the information. It wasn't verified information. As a matter of law, special counsel law, they have a duty and responsibility to do that, not telling the judge, both in the original application, subsequent applications, that, oh, Hillary paid for this, just an asterisk. Well, it may have a slight political taint to it. That's not the answer. They knew the answer. Or the fact that Hillary Clinton committed multiple felonies, obstructed justice by deletions and acid washing and beating up Blackberries. And then, of course, Comey and Strzok and Page, they all hate Donald Trump, and especially Comey and Strzok, writing an exoneration before even the investigation. They were writing it in early May. They didn't interview Hillary or 17 other witnesses till July. 2 days later, oh, you're innocent. Okay, I want the same treatment for Donald Trump with the special counsel. So we have all of that information. Then we got surveillance and unmasking and leaking raw intelligence. Unmasking at a level we've never seen in this country ever before. 350% increase in the last year of the Obama administration. People like Samantha Power unmasking about a person a day. Why would the UN ambassador be unmasking American citizens through illegal surveillance of the government? Now we're talking about deep state actors that are abusing these powerful tools that we need in a dark and evil world to protect us. Only a few actors. And then we see, of course, you know, people look at what the actions of Andrew McCabe and James Comey. And then, of course, we have Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr. And then, of course, we got Page and Strzok. And we got James Baker involved in all of this. Rubinsky's involved in all of this. And what's Loretta Lynch's role in all of this? And it goes on and on. Anyway, to join us now, we have David Schoen, criminal civil liberties attorney, also Sarah Carter, sarahacarter.com, investigative reporter, Fox News contributor. Let's go into your story, Sarah, about this coordination with Mueller and Comey. Pretty jarring.
It is pretty jarring. And, there had been suspicions about this last year in June. Actually, Fox News was the first to report that there may have been some coordination here. And now there's actual proof based on these emails. And, you know, everything, Sean, that everyone's had to do to try to get documentation has been crazy. I mean, they've had to wait months, weeks, a year, you know, for documentation to come out. And now Judicial Watch was able to obtain, through FOIA, through the Freedom of Information Act request, these emails that show that Comey was coordinating with Mueller on his testimony, that he was waiting to talk to Mueller before he would give a go-ahead on his testimony to the Senate Intelligence Committee. And I think that's vitally important because, as you well pointed out, you know, Comey and Mueller are very close. The whole reason for Comey to leak his memorandums to the New York Times, professor friend, who then leaked it to the New York Times with his permission, the whole reason for that was to call for a special counsel. And so if there's any conflicts here, the conflicts appear to be all on this Mueller, Comey, Rod Rosenstein, Jeannie Ray, all of the people that are working for him, and we just keep finding more and more information out, and this coordination appears to be problematic.
Let me go to the legal aspects of this, David Schoen, beyond the simple and obvious coordination, and I'll even use the word collusion in a way, but maybe not legally speaking. Do you see anything legally problematic with what Sarah's reporting?
Sure. Legally, ethically, and otherwise, on a gut level and every other level. Look, at the time this occurred, even though they referred to Mr. Comey as director still, he was no longer the director of the FBI. How is the former director of the FBI setting up meetings with the Office of General Counsel of the FBI before his testimony? If he had a question about a certain disclosure or privilege, the appropriate course of action would be for his attorney, Comey's attorney, not Comey, to contact the OGC at the FBI and discuss those specific questions, not the substance of testimony. Look, the vice president said it. Enough is enough. How on earth can the American people have any confidence that the special counsel investigation is above board and has any integrity, especially an investigation of their duly elected president? Enough is enough. With these personalities and these conflicts and this operation behind the scenes of people getting stories together and presenting a particular agenda, it's inappropriate. I want to make one last point on this. Remember, back up a step. The special counsel was appointed based on a finding under 600.1 that there's a conflict for the Department of Justice or any U.S. Attorney's Office to be involved with this. Who on earth is monitoring who's speaking to whom? Why is the special counsel cooperating, coordinating with DOJ? And now, Mr. Comey, a witness in the question. I take exception to a comment I read from Judge Napolitano in which he said it's normal because this is a star witness for Mr. Mueller. Comey is not to be a star witness for Mr. Mueller. He's a former public servant questioned to give the truth before Senate and House committees.
Do you feel, as an attorney who knows the law well, do you suspect and feel like others, including Greg Jarrett and many others, actually, that the release of that privileged information and government information was in and of itself a crime when he gave it to three people? And then under oath, of course, he only acknowledged one of the three. I think you could make an argument about lying about on omission here. And of course, I do think, and we'll watch the Inspector General report, Comey's, you know, preparing different variations of the exoneration of Hillary before he ever interviewed her. Or the 17 other witnesses. That sounds like obstruction, or at least the possibility it has to be looked into, doesn't it?
Well, look, it has to be looked into, but you've also hit on one of the key points. Comey's statements about what he did with these documents is a key to determining whether it was a crime. The nature of the documents may well determine whether there was a crime. At a minimum, and I think I'm hoping we see this at a minimum from the IG's report, it would appear to be a gross breach of his employment agreement, the oath of office that he took, etc. And especially here, what's most distressing about it is he has an admitted agenda, an agenda to circumvent the channels, an agenda to bring private information for the specific purpose of making it public and having a special counsel appointed. That's not his role.
That's pretty amazing. Sarah, let me go back to some other issues here involving not just Comey, but the other issue we've been following, and that is it seems that Devin Nunes, the Freedom Caucus, the other committee chairmen such as Goodlatte, Trey Gowdy have had it, and they're now actively considering contempt of Congress as it relates to Rod Rosenstein and Jeff Sessions. I know there was a meeting today with Trey Gowdy and Devin Nunes, and I believe Rod Rosenstein. What has come out of that? Because they have been slow walking. They've been claiming redactions in the name of national security that have been proven false. It had nothing to do with national security. And they just completely ignore, miss deadlines constantly.
It's incredible. And a lot of the stories that are out there are actually inaccurate. You know, they have been fighting tooth and nail, and they went down. They're there today to meet with the attorney general and Rod Rosenstein, the assistant attorney general, in discussions to view what is highly classified information that they have requested for some time now, which, of course, they've been stonewalled over and over again. They will have, and they do, and I can correct the record because yesterday there were a lot of stories saying that the White House was siding with the DOJ on this. I spoke to people on the Hill today that wanted to correct that record, and also with other sources that said the White House was not siding with the DOJ on this, that the White House offered the DOJ another alternative for the congressional members to actually view the information that they had requested. Whether that's in camera at the DOJ or someplace else. So they are offering the Congress the opportunity to view those documents. And that is going to be very important. It may not be information that the public, though, will be made aware of because of the classified nature of the information. But as you know, Sean, before, there were all these arguments that certain documents should not be made public, that the Russia report contained highly classified national security information. And finally, when it was overridden by the White House, there was information that was discovered. What we found was that there was nothing in there that would threaten national security. So this is very, very important. There is a debate going on right now. They are working through this, and we should be getting more information by tonight as to what they were allowed to view and what they were allowed to see.
What about the polls now showing that Americans now see that Robert Mueller's investigation is politically driven? If you couple that with Judge Ellis's powerful comments on Friday in the Manafort case, where he rightly pointed out that the 2005 to 2007 tax issue involving the Ukraine had nothing to do with 2016 Trump, a Russia collusion of any kind, and that this was to put the screws on Manafort and to pressure Manafort and to get him to sing so they could prosecute or impeach Donald Trump. What does this all now mean for Mueller, David Schoen?
Well, the Judge Ellis statement speaks volumes and volumes and volumes because he's not a part of the political process. He's a judge, a tough judge, a no-nonsense judge. He's the same judge who set a very high bail for Mr. Manafort, found him to be a flight risk. He's had enough. He's calling him out on it, much like perhaps the letter from the FISA court in response to a letter from Congress may have been showing some frustration by that court. Look, and the other factor, by the way, that you didn't add in this conversation that you were on top of from the beginning about American Public and the Mueller investigation is the makeup of the Mueller team. You tell any fair American citizen who's on that team what their background is, what their agenda was, who they contribute to, et cetera, as you pointed out on your show from day one and Sarah Carter has written about, no American would think that's fair if they look at it objectively. No.
We'll take a quick break. More with David Schoen, Sarah Carter on the other side. We'll talk about that other ruling that came from another judge this past Saturday when we get back. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Newt Gingrich at the bottom of the hour and much more as we continue. And as we continue with attorney David Schoen, investigative reporter Sarah Carter, you know, you mentioned something in passing, David, and I'll throw it to Sarah first here. On Saturday night, the judge in the case of these 13, you know, the indictment that came down as it relates to 13 Russian troll farms. Well, Robert Mueller wasn't expecting that. Well, one of those companies is actually going to defend itself, and they did. And Mueller lost. He wanted to delay the process. And that now is getting underway. And that, I think, puts Mueller in a position where he's going to have to withdraw these indictments because he's not going to share this information with Russian troll farms, that if they really are such, like he claims.
Well, I think this is the most fascinating, most underreported story out there, right? Because it's kind of like a Law and Order moment. One of the sources I was talking to told me it was a moment where I think Mueller's team, and this team actually is being led by Jeanne Rae, and we all know who Jeanne Rae is. She's a big Clinton supporter. She maxed out all of her donations in 2015 and 2016 to Hillary Clinton. So she's in the courtroom, and all of a sudden, you know, here comes on Wednesday the people representing this Russian company, these attorneys, and they're like, okay, we want this to go to court. We want a speedy trial. Now that opens up Robert Mueller to discovery. This is incredible. So now they're going to be opened up to discovery, and it will require the special counsel to turn over all the evidence required by law that they had collected. And that is huge, Sean.
Let me jump in because we're running out of time. Does that mean Mueller has to pull out for national security reasons, David Schoen? And Mueller never thought this was going to happen. This was a show indictment, wasn't it?
It looks like it. And the other problem he's facing is speedy trial. That's where these lawyers strategically moved in. There's a speedy trial clock running. If Mueller's not prepared, the indictment could be dismissed. He may dismiss it and reindict, or he may convince the judge. These folks have a way of working behind the scenes, it seems.
It's unbelievable. Let me applaud both of you and Greg Jarrett and Sebastian Gorka and Sidney Powell and Tom Fitton and so many others that have worked so hard on all of this. You guys have been amazing. And layer by layer, it's now everything you've been reporting, Sarah, we've been talking about, David, is now coming true.
My number one priority is to dismantle the disastrous deal with Iran. I have been in business a long time. I know deal making. And let me tell you, this deal is catastrophic for America, for Israel, and for the whole of the Middle East. This was just prior to the signing of the Iran deal, which gave back to Iran $150 billion and gave us absolutely nothing. It will go down in history as one of the worst deals ever negotiated.
The Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions the United States has ever entered into. Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it, believe me.
I think it's the worst document I've ever seen as far as the negotiation is concerned.
Never, ever, ever in my life have I seen any transaction so incompetently negotiated as our deal with Iran.
All right, that, of course, was the president. It's been an incredible week as it relates to foreign policy. I stayed up, I know many of you did, late last night to see the release of these three American hostages. Now, this on the heels, the lead up to this is amazing. It's fascinating. It's historic. You know, everybody in the media, every Democrat, when you call him Little Rocket Man, he's going to get mad and you're going to start a nuclear war. Well, not only did the president call out Kim Jong-un repeatedly, he showed up a carrier strike force in the region to show a military presence. He strategically partnered with the president of China, which squeezed North Korea economically. He put his own sanctions on North Korea. And the next thing we know is Little Rocket Man is crossing the DMZ, meeting the South Korean president. Little Rocket Man stopped firing missiles over Japan and threatening the world. Little Rocket Man has now released three hostages, and he's now talking about the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Everything that the media and Democrats said would never happen. Joining us now with his historic insight, a great historian in his own right and a professor at heart more than anything, is former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. How are you, sir?
I'm doing really well, and I share kind of your sense of amazement. What a couple of days. And the president tweeted out today that they're going to meet in Singapore, which is, I mean, who could have predicted 2 years ago or 3 years ago that we'd come this far down the road this fast? Now, you know, as the president keeps saying, the deal's not done. His goal is the same as it's always been, which is a denuclearized North Korea. And he's going to stay focused on getting that done. But between his courage in standing up to all of our allies on Iran, report they gave Israel today when the Iranians fired some 20 missiles at Israel, and the Israelis responded by bombing sites in Syria, the degree to which they're moving things. I thought the classic moment this week is the New York Times wondering where Secretary of State Pompeo is and why is he missing when the president announced the Iran deal. And, of course, it turned out, well, he was missing because he was meeting with Kim Jong-un, getting three Americans released and setting the stage for a historic meeting in Singapore. And I would think even for the New York Times, there might be space here for an apology.
I wouldn't hold your breath. That wouldn't be under, I wouldn't put you under advisement for that. I'm actually, yeah. I'm strongly considering, I think we're going to take this show, this radio show and TV show to Singapore. You know, this has, look, you're right.
We
don't know what the final outcome is going to be, but I know this, we haven't had a rocket fired since Kim Jong-un said he wouldn't fire them. We had the hostages released. I mean, that image of Kim Jong-un crossing the DMZ into the arms of the South Korean president and the fact that he's willing to talk about the denuclearization of the entire region and America didn't have to drop $150 billion in cash and other currency. It's a pretty amazing moment. It very reminiscent, I think, of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah, look, there are a lot of parallels here between Reagan's pleasant firmness and the dismantling of the Soviet Empire. But I think it was very telling today and very smart that, and unlike you, I saw the arrival and the president's comments. I mean, it was the right tone. It was the right way of saying, look, you do the right things. We're going to be nice to you. Now let's talk about the next set of right things we need to get done. Mm-hmm. I think it also speaks very well of Secretary of State Pompeo and the job he's doing, that he could get this much done this quickly.
I've always liked him. Don't you like? I've always thought a lot of him.
Mike's been a great guy. I knew him back when he was in the House. He is a remarkable talent and did a great job at the Central Intelligence Agency. And, of course, here you have a guy who spent the last several years at the CIA looking at Korea. So his ability to sit down in a room with Kim Jong-un with a level of knowledge that very few people have, and also to learn. I think he spent 90 minutes with him, and I suspect he came away having picked up a lot of points and a lot of insights that he did not have when he landed in North Korea.
Let me move on. In the midst of all of this foreign policy success, and in the midst of, let's see, we're now headed to 4 million new jobs created by the president, the lowest number of people on food stamps in years. Every economic statistic is more unbelievable than the next. 14 states have record low unemployment numbers, record low unemployment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, women in the workplace. All of this is happening, but yet the president and every news channel and every big newspaper in the country, they seem fixated and focused on Russia, Russia, Stormy, Stormy, and they barely cover what is now been clearly revealed as it relates to some of the highest people within our government involved in very nefarious activities, and it's only going to get worse for most of them.
Well, I think, first of all, some of that's going to come out just because that's the nature of the information, that it's just going to happen. And day by day, we're going to learn more things.
What I really want to ask, though, is, you know, at what point I saw that Vice President Pence, you know, very quiet guy for the most part, saying Mueller needs to wrap this up. And I don't see Robert Mueller and his merry band of Democratic donors and people with very questionable ethical histories like Andrew Weissman wrapping it up. It seems like they're digging in deeper and deeper and deeper.
But remember, they're now on quicksand. I mean, they've got this whole problem with Judge Ellis in the Manafort case in Virginia. But they may be actually about to get into a real mess because one of the Russian companies that they cheerfully mentioned that they were going to indict has come into an American court and said, fine, we're ready to go to trial, and we want the right of discovery. Well, I guarantee you, Mueller does not want to give them the right of discovery. And that this is one of both Andy McCarthy, who you know well, the former prosecutor of terrorists.
Yeah, he's on
Andy
tonight.
Said the other day, you know, you should never. Well, it's great he's going to be on tonight. He'll have a lot to say about this. You can ask him to expand on this. He said, you should never indict somebody you're not prepared to try. And I guarantee you they are not prepared to go through discovery with a Russian company with good lawyers, and because they don't want to, they're not going to be able to reveal some national security assets if they do exist. And it's going to show how weak their case is. I mean, this Russian company didn't come into the American court because they think they're guilty. They came in because they think this whole thing is an absurdity. So I think you're going to see Mueller have considerable problems trying to solve all this. And I don't think that it is necessarily going to go very well for him. And I think between those two cases, he's literally now on quicksand.
Well, let me ask you this, because we heard the beatdown of this judge on Friday in the Manafort case. And, you know, the judge was very clear. Let's just be clear in the courtroom here. This so-called tax fraud case against Manafort from, 2005 to 2007, well, this has nothing to do with Trump and Russia and the election. As a matter of fact, this has to do with business in the Ukraine, doesn't it, sir? I mean, it was a beatdown against the special counsel's legal team. And he goes, I've seen this before. I've been around a long time. Basically, you just want to put the screws to Paul Manafort in the hopes that he'll give you information that will help you really get to your main target, who is Donald Trump, to either prosecute or impeach. So you're basically using this old, old case that was handed to you by the Department of Justice to make Paul Manafort sing against Donald Trump. I could not believe, and the judge didn't stop, Mr. Speaker.
I think he clearly made the case in a way that was devastating, and that even the mainstream media decided they had to actually report. And I thought it was a substantial loss of prestige for Mueller. And as I said, that's now been followed by this new effort by the Russians to actually force Mueller to go into court and prove his case. And I think in the next few weeks, you may well see as Trump becomes more respected, both on the economy and on foreign policy, you may see the entire Mueller team decaying in ways nobody could have guessed a month ago.
I just don't see it. I mean, if Mueller wanted to get out of it, all he would do is say, okay, we'll agree to written answers to these questions by the president, get it done. Because the minute he demands that the president goes and sits down with Mueller and you know, if it's the New York Times 49 questions, which I know wasn't true, but he wants to get into, well, what were you thinking then? What were you thinking here? We all know that no lawyer is going to allow the president of the United States to subject himself to such an interview, and they're going to back out, which means it's a year-long or longer legal battle, and the Constitution is on the side of the president.
That's right. And I'm not at all sure that it's going to go that far. If they get humiliated, again, because remember, Judge Ellis has said within 2 weeks they're supposed to give him the entire unredacted the document that Rosenstein signed empowering him. And I think they don't want to give it away for reasons, I think, that it will prove that he has gone way beyond his assignment, he, Mueller. And then second, they're now going to be faced with this discovery problem in the Russian case. And I just have a—I may be wrong here, but I just have a feeling this thing may start to sputter and come to a conclusion before they ever get around to interviewing the president.
Well, it didn't really come up. It was referenced, but in a more obscure way, because I read the 50 pages of what happened on Friday. I read it at least four times now. And what was fascinating to me, if you look at the timeline, the judge was talking a lot about the Rosenstein mandate and what it was given in terms of powers handed off to the special counsel, Mueller, and then he appointed his team of unethical Democratic donors. But putting that aside, if you look at the timeline, they raided Paul Manafort's home at dawn on July 26th. And then on August 2nd, that's when Rod Rosenstein gave the addendum that allowed Mueller to investigate and do all of this. Now, maybe I'm just, a small town kid from Long Island, New York, and maybe I've got it all wrong. But to me, it seems to be the exact opposite that should happen, that if Rod Rosenstein wants to approve this type of action against Paul Manafort for a tax issue in 2005, he should actually issue the approval first before the raid takes place. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, of course you're right. And of course, this is why you get into these kind of procedural fights where really good lawyers come in and say this whole case needs to be thrown out. And that's why you'll notice, I mean, Manafort did not counterattack by filing suit just frivolously. I think Manafort and his lawyers believe that what Mueller's done is so far beyond what their authority was that they're going to get thrown out. And certainly what Ellis was indicating the other day, Judge Ellis, is there's a very real possibility they're going to throw the whole case out.
You know, it just is. And then we go back to where we started here, and that is the foreign policy success of the president. Then we look at the economic success of the president, you know, and really more, I think, impressive than anything else is that when this president makes a promise, he keeps it. And I think that's good politics. And I think the Republican Party, we've got the 2018s coming up here. Maybe they could learn a thing or two about good governance is good for your political fortunes.
So the first time I began to see reporters, senior reporters, who've been saying to me, you know, this guy actually does mean what he campaigned on, and he really is strategically very set on doing what he promised to do. And I think that that's beginning to finally sink in how really different and how really serious President Trump is. And the other thing, which I think we don't give enough credit for, is remember, he has all of this legal noise in the background. He has all of these personality attacks. He has all these things that a lesser person would be shaken by. And he just lets them run off his back, and he stays focused on what matters. The economy matters. He's winning. Conservative judges matter. He's winning. Solving North Korea matters. He's winning. Getting out of the terrible Iranian agreement matters. He's winning. And I think from the level of ability to ignore the pain and focus is really a remarkable thing. And he deserves as much credit for that as he does for the actual achievements.
All right, Mr. Speaker, always good to talk to you. We appreciate it. All right. When we come back, our news roundup information overload hour with Danielle McLaughlin and Jonathan Gillum. What is the biggest foreign policy week in many, many, many years? We'll go over that and more straight ahead.
You deserve the Nobel Prize, do you think?
Everyone thinks so, but I would never say it. You know what I want to do? I want to get it finished. The prize I want is victory for the world, not for even here. I want victory for the world, because that's what we're talking about. So that's the only prize I want.
Could something still scuttle this meeting, the summit?
Everything can be scuttled. Everything can be scuttled. Doesn't mean a lot of things can happen. A lot of good things can happen. A lot of bad things can happen. I believe that we have both sides want to negotiate a deal. I think it's going to be a very successful deal. I think we have a really good shot at making it successful, but lots of things can happen. And of course, you'll be the first to know about it if it does.
Go back, go back, go back, go back, go back. North Korea, this is a very serious issue. And what I am most critical of is that you cannot deal with North Korea unless you work with our allies, South Korea and Japan, and you move China. As much as possible, right? So it doesn't help for the president on Twitter to insult South Korea.
That is not useful
in our trying to bring people together to deal with what is a very serious threat to our own national security.
Yeah, of course, her husband told her this is a good deal for the American people when he tried to bribe North Korea, too, with energy subs, $3 billion. And that didn't work out so well, did it? And it's going to stop the nuclear program. Anyway, glad you're with us. News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. As we welcome back to the program, Danielle McLaughlin, attorney, constitutional expert. Also, our friend Jonathan Gillum, author of the newly released book, Sheep No More. I am really, really sad to hear, Jonathan, that I just heard from Linda that you lost your dog of 17 years. My little dog Snowball lived 17 years, and it's just painful. I'm so sorry.
Thank you very much. He's my best friend, my mentor, like my son, and it was a good 17 years. He's going to be drastically missed for sure.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's amazing. You know, dogs are nicer to us than other people. They're more loyal. It's amazing. And I have really great friends in life. I'm not saying they're better than my friends, but I love my dogs. I sent my dog Marley recently. I was hoping she was going to get pregnant. I don't know if it happened or not. We'll find out probably in a couple of days when she gets an ultrasound. But we're hopeful that maybe, in fact, and if at some point you want another dog, I would be glad to give you a gift of a new puppy.
Well, we may have to look into that. I tell you, Sean, for me, I've never had kids. The loss in coming home every day, it's not there anymore. It's going to take me a while to get past it, as you know. But I'm telling you, in a mad world like we see and that we talk about every week, it sure is a dose of sanity every time you come home.
Let me tell you, it really is. I'm very sorry. Welcome both of you, by the way, back to the program. I think that was Hillary Clinton. And by the way, hello, Danielle. It's always good to have you. That was your friend Hillary Clinton saying Trump's tweets on North Korea are not useful. I would argue that, well, what her husband did trying to bribe North Korea was not useful. But Donald Trump did taunt publicly Kim Jong-un and called him Little Rocket Man. Well, now there are no more rockets being fired over Japan. Guam is not being threatened. The United States is not being threatened. We saw Kim Jong-un cross the DMZ, historic moment, into the arms of the South Korean dictator. Hostages were, in fact, released. And, of course, now we're talking about the denuclearization of the entire peninsula. I would say that peace through strength works.
Hi, Sean. Let me, before I answer that, I just want to also add my condolences to you, Jonathan. I know how much you love Rico, and, my heart is with you. I understand that these pups are family members and our kids, and, my heart is with you.
Thank you, Sean.
You're so welcome, my friend. Sean, to your question, what we've seen is a real shift from Donald Trump. We did see a lot of this Rocket Man stuff early on in his presidency and certainly through campaigning. But what we've seen, I think, is a switch to a little bit of a gentler touch and more diplomacy. We've seen Pompeo over there twice, which is classic diplomacy, and wonderful news, of course, with the release of three prisoners. Hillary Clinton did say we needed to engage our allies in the region, and that's what the Trump administration has done. They've been talking with Japan, they've been talking with South Korea, they've been talking with China. I have plenty of criticisms of the president for other reasons, but if he can get this done, this will be an historic moment.
Well, I think it could be. And so it really happened from Donald Trump, didn't it? It was him taking a tough position, Democrats predicting nuclear war, Hillary Clinton saying that it's not useful. And we know her husband's policies failed because he promised us that North Korea wouldn't get a nuclear weapon after he bribed North Korea, correct?
Well, you're talking about what happened in the early 90s.
Excuse me. No. We're talking about the billions of dollars that Bill Clinton used to bribe Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-un's father. We're talking about the billions that Obama used to try and bribe, in his particular case, the mullahs in Iran. And these were people chanting before and after that deal, death to America, and burning the U.S. flag and the Israeli flag, and they burned it again yesterday. So I don't believe in bribing despots, mullahs, radical mullahs, despots, and people that abuse their own people. No, I'm not interested in being nice to them or giving them any money. None. Are you?
No, I'm not interested in bribery, but first things first, the money that Iran got back when the Iran deal was signed was Iran's money. It was $400 million for a weapons deal that never got completed back in 1979 and $1.3 billion of interest. And that process went through The Hague for many, many years. So you call it a bribe, I call it something else, but I will agree with you that we shouldn't be bribing despots and we shouldn't be paying ransoms to get hostages back.
What's your take, Jonathan?
Well, I don't. What show are we on? Because Daniel sounds like a conservative now.
Well, I guess through the prism of history that we're right. What is she going to say? No, I want to go back to bribing dictators. Hang on.
So you know, here's what's great about this whole thing is that I had a feeling, as you did, that this would take a little over a year before President Trump got into office and started doing stuff before the proof. And the pudding would start to pour out of the bottle. And this is what is so great about this. No matter making things happen, and the proof is in the results. But somehow,
well, you mean like the economy, GDP growth, the 3.7%? That would be pretty good news, I think, right? I mean, I don't remember Obama ever having that. And yeah, or record low unemployment in 14 states, Jonathan, or record low unemployment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, women in the workplace, like those things? Oh, and three plus million jobs created? Is that what you're talking about?
All measurable. All measurable. In this case, we're looking at North Korea. You know, President Clinton had his chance for 8 years. All he did was pay the North Koreans. Obama had his chance. He didn't do anything. Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, had her chance to make real differences. She just killed four Americans. I mean, it's like these people, if you look, and I said this on Fox News several years ago when Obama was in office, if you look at a true professional like President Trump, you're going to measure them by the details of the things that they do correctly. But when you're measuring people like the Clintons and the Obamas and John Kerry and all these people, you're literally looking at the size of their mistake. And when you look at President Trump, you're looking at detail-oriented results. And they just refuse to accept these things, but it doesn't matter. Because how many things is he going to do correctly before the stats just start to overflow, which they are already? It's pretty phenomenal.
Well, Danielle, I just begin to see a pattern, and the pattern's very simple. It's Neville Chamberlain peace in our time, and it's Winston Churchill, blood, toil, tears, and sweat. Our aim is victory, victory. And the two very distinct approaches to evil in their time. Now we have evil in our time that we're dealing with. And if you have radical Islamic mullahs that have nuclear weapons, well, that sounds like the potential for a modern-day Holocaust, especially when they chant regularly, death to Israel, death to America. Barack Obama thought that $150 billion in cash and other currencies was going to make them like us more. Well, the net result of that is, thanks to Prime Minister Netanyahu and our allies in Israel, we discovered they do have a nuclear program, and they've been lying to the entire world the whole time. And they have a ballistic missile program. So if we don't get the problem solved now, well, then we run the risk. In the last century, 100 million people were killed. How many people would be killed if it's A squared, B squared, C squared? Radical Islamic mullahs that chant death to America, death to Israel, coupled with weapons of mass destruction, that equals to me the potential of a modern-day Holocaust. Am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong. I think that there is a different way of approaching this that we can talk about, and I think we should talk about. First and foremost, the Netanyahu intelligence. In April of this year, Mike Pompeo, now obviously Secretary of State, said that there was no evidence that we had that Iran was not in compliance. I'm no friend of this regime, but the question is, what is your strategy here? Did we have more bargaining power to stop their ICBMs and to stop their march into Syria if we stayed in the deal and exerted pressure otherwise? Or have we got less leverage now that we've sort of stepped away from our allies and the others, you know, the seven other parties in this deal? Do we have less leverage? leverage now. I don't think anyone's quibbling with the idea that we need to constrain Iran and that Iran is an enemy of this country. The question is, how do we do it?
Well, how do we do it? What's wrong with the president's policy? It seems to be working pretty well in North Korea, Jonathan.
Well, I think he is. I think you're exactly right. I don't know if that type of policy would work with Iran, but maybe it would. But here's the thing, you know, everybody has to remember that Iran declared war on us in 1979. And we have been in a state of war with them since then. It's just that they don't fight us directly. They fight proxy wars. Wherever you are in the Middle East, they're supporting the fight through money. And then also terrorism against Israel, they do the same thing. And I am of the mindset that Iran needs a spanking. And they've never been spanked. And instead, what do? We turn
well,
around.
Well, look at what Israel did last night. I mean, they fired missiles from their bases in Syria, meaning the Iranians, and the Israelis pounded back. Now, not one Israeli
right.
died, but they're taking out their weapon sites, and they're showing nothing but pure, unadulterated strength and commitment that they're not going to take this crap from the mullahs in Iran, and that should be the world's position. But unfortunately, you still have modern-day appeasers in the world. All right, we've got to take a break. More with Jonathan Gillum and more with Danielle McLaughlin on the other side. 800-941-SEAN. We'll take your calls in the final half hour of the program. Maybe I'll play Winston Churchill, too, and much more as we continue. All right, as we continue, Jonathan Gillum and Danielle McLaughlin, our News Roundup Information Overload Hour. How do you explain 3 million jobs created, Danielle? How do you explain 14 states' record low unemployment? Record low unemployment, African-Americans, Hispanic-Americans, women in the workplace. How do you explain, now we're headed to 4 million new jobs. How do you explain America now on the road to energy independence? How do you explain the biggest tax cut in history as anything other than an unmitigated success on every level?
Well, I can tell you one thing, is that some of these things that Trump has done, he stands on the shoulders of Obama. And I say that because President Obama brought this country back from the brink of financial collapse in 2008, 2009. And so full credit for the unemployment numbers, the stock market rising, the fact that wages are slowly rising. But all of these trends started under Obama after we had a real financial disaster. So if we're going to be reasonable about this, I think we should give full credit to Obama.
Full credit to Obama.
Well, you know, not full.
Wait a
minute.
Wait. Obama had 8 years. What did we end up with?
Sure, look,
hold on. We doubled our national debt. Lowest labor participation rate since the 70s. Lowest home ownership rate in 51 years. We had 13 million more Americans on food stamps, Jonathan. 8 million more in poverty. I don't know what world Danielle was living in this time, but the time capsule is not. It's fairly recent memory. And 8 years, he has a track record that spoke for itself. Now we've changed policies and changed course, and now we're benefiting from that major change.
You know, I love you, Danielle. There's only so much I can do to take up for you on social media. I have a feeling you're going to get hammered a little bit for that one on Twitter.
I can take it. And I would like to correct myself. I didn't mean full credit. This is a New Zealandism. I mean that you have to admit that Obama takes some credit for taking us out of the second largest financial crisis after the Great Depression.
I don't see it that way at all. What I see is I saw some of Bill Clinton where their status quo, where things stayed the same, but I didn't see through Obama any major gain in anything economical at all. In fact, what I see now with Trump coming in reminds me very similarly to when, you know, you have warriors go through the door when you're facing an enemy, and if somebody freezes at the door, they just shove them out of the way, and the train keeps going in. And that's what I look at when I look at Obama and all his administration. Whatever door they got to, whether it's economic, whether it was they were trying to talk and to somebody like Iran, where you got to stand up to them, or drawing a red line in the sand, they froze at the door. When President Trump came in, he just shoved whatever useless policies they had out of the way, and he charged in. And I'm telling you, if he keeps this up, the record will just speak for itself.
Last word, Danielle.
Look, I will give full credit to the president, our current president, for the good things he's done financially, but I will not stand for not giving credit to President Obama, who pulled us back from the brink in 2009.
Okay, and he got 13 million more Americans on food stamps and 8 million more in poverty and doubled the national debt and gave us the lowest labor participation rate. I you know, and by the way, gave Iran $150 billion. We could have used that money in this country. All right, I got to let it go there. Thank you both for being with us. All right, 25 now until the top of the hour. I mean, what a unbelievable news cycle we're living in. It's almost hard to ever get a day off. Linda's saying, well, you got to take off tomorrow. And I'm like, I can't take off tomorrow. I got to work. There's too much going on. And
no, I'm pretty sure that the boss told you you could take off.
Okay, who's the boss? You?
You're the boss.
Oh, that's the first time I've heard that, and it's oh.
Should we like save the that Sean, audio wait, forever?
What is the name of the Sean Hannity Show Christmas party every year that we've just started? Our new ritual, our new
year, our new every year annual, but it's only been 1 year party.
That one, yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah, it's the Linda McLaughlin party.
No.
With special guests.
Okay. Well, so it was
Which you can be one when you so choose.
Well, if I'm going next year, we're gonna have a band, a real band.
I do agree with that.
I was told there was gonna be a band this year, and
I was misinformed. It happened.
That was my fault. I'm sorry.
What? Why was it your fault? It was her party.
Because I was the one. I was.
Lauren,
I like to party plan, Sean. I don't know if you know this about me, but I actually love party planning, and so that was my fault.
Oh, I haven't heard. I haven't heard about
the guitar.
I haven't heard about the great wedding of this. You know, forget the wedding that's going to happen in England. The big wedding is your wedding.
See, it's funny. I like to plan for other people. But I don't like being the center of attention, so
really?
My own wedding actually gives me anxiety.
And the only way that's going to happen is if you go elope and go to the Little White Chapel in Vegas and come home and say, I'm married. Because otherwise, it's going to be, oh, Lauren, oh, you're such a beautiful
I would have
bride.
Needed you to tell my parents that I got eloped or something so I didn't have to do
oh,
it.
Oh, I could handle that in 10 seconds. That's, you know, let me be the bad guy all the time.
Listen, I offered to marry them. I was going to get my minister's certificate online, and Lauren said no.
Oh, I would do that in 2 seconds.
Because, see, now, if I said I was going to marry them, her parents definitely would have told her to elope. Oh, no, we can't have her.
I don't
presiding.
Think there's ever been a wedding ceremony where F-bombs are dropped like every 10 seconds. 800-941-SHAWN is our number if you want to be a part.
Do you want to announce some good news today, my friend?
What's the good news? I haven't had good news in
our
a long time.
Our economy. Another
well,
promise.
I said that earlier. 3.7% GDP growth.
We should remind our audience. It's
no,
good
it's,
news.
It is unbelievable. It is. Listen, everything is rocking and rolling.
Jason, remind the audience.
And listen, I look all day long, all day, and all I see is stormy, 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 Russia, Russia, Russia. You know, it's just unbelievable to me.
I think after the stormy sound, we have to start playing the Russian national anthem.
Yeah, we remember.
Back to one, back, back
one
to back.
One of the funniest things that I ever heard Rush Limbaugh do on radio is he called it a gorbasm. That was that feeling you get. You know, well, there was an Obama, a similar.
Right, the Obamagasm, yeah.
Right. So, but I remember he'd play this music behind it, and it. Because it was, you know, he started in the middle of the Cold War his syndicated radio show. One of the funniest things he ever did. And it's like everybody had this feeling, ah, oh, Gorbachev, the savior. It wasn't Gorbachev. It was Reagan that was the savior. Just like it's Trump here. You know, all the parallels and lessons. The other night on TV, and we've been doing it on radio, but I actually showed the video, Churchill, Chamberlain, Reagan, Clinton, Obama, Trump. And there's two very different, you know, thought processes as it relates to dealing with the world's despots and dictators and murderers and killers. And there is a group of thought out there, and it has been held by some presidents, that you need to bribe and you need to get down on bended knee and you need to kiss the ring of despots and dictators. No victory. Blood, toil, tears, sweat.
I would say to the House, as I said to those who have joined the government,
victory.
I have nothing to offer
nothing.
But blood, toil, tears,
and sweat.
You ask, what is our policy?
What is our policy?
I will say, it is to wage war by sea, land, and air, with all our might, with all the strength that God can give us, to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark and lamentable catalogue of human crime. You ask, what is our aim?
Victory.
I can answer in one word. Victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be. For without victory, there is no survival.
Without victory, there is no survival. One of the greatest forces of strength in the last 100 years of human history, Winston Churchill. An amazing man. By the way, he was not particularly liked by the establishment. Yeah, but when when the world needed him, he was there. You know, to think that the Prime Minister of England and the bombing of Britain every single day got out of his bunker, which he wasn't in, 10 Downing Street, and walked amongst the people of Britain to encourage them and to be with them and put, yeah, his life at risk, too. That to me is leadership. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. All right, let's get to our busy telephones here as we say hi to Steve, is in Kansas. Steve, hi, how are you? Glad you called, sir.
Hello, Mr. Hannity. It is truly an honor to get on your radio program.
The honor's all mine.
Well, thank you, sir. I have a little bit of a question here. I think that the top Republican leaders in our country are in on the fix with the Democrats. I think they let Trump run against Hillary, thinking Hillary would win. And none of them look bad by losing to Hillary, and none of them had the game to fight Hillary in a fair fight. Trump did, fortunately, and won. When you look at all the things that they've done, very few of the top Republicans endorsed, voted. They don't support Trump these days. They're dragging their feet on getting anything done. If this was the Democrats going after Rosenstein, they would be done already. They would have their paperwork. They'd go through it. They'd shred it and go on down the road.
Listen, I hope Newt's right. I hope that, and I did think on Friday last week that this is now a game changer for Mueller. And then on Saturday, That was a game changer for Mueller. And now the contempt threat is a game changer for the whole investigation. Because Mueller knows, they all know that people like me and Sarah Carter and Greg Jarrett and Tom Fitton and Sebastian Gorka and David Schoen, Sidney Powell, they know we were right. We've been right from the get-go. We have all been right.
I see Rosenstein in handcuffs being taken out for contempt of court and lock him up for a few days until he gives the order to give the paperwork up. Mueller, I tell people Mueller will be indicted for criminal charges long before Trump will ever be.
Listen, I will tell you this, and I mean this, and don't ever underestimate the power of the deep state. Don't underestimate. Chuck Schumer, in many ways, was right. They're going to get you 8 ways in Sunday. And unfortunately, this is the biggest abuse of power and corruption scandal in our history. And it's been exposed. And people that are involved in these types of nefarious activities don't like being exposed, and they don't like the people that expose them. And all the people I listed, including yours truly, we are hated right now. Absolutely despised. I've never, ever, ever have had the type of scrutiny in my life. As a matter of fact, Barack Obama has not had this type of scrutiny by people hoping and praying that they can take this show down. That's just a, Linda, am I overstating that case or not?
Sadly, you're not.
I'm not. And this is what these people do on the left. It's just like the Alinsky 101. Isolate, target, destroy. And that's what they try to do.
I said it to somebody yesterday. I said, you know, I've really been doing this a long time. And I said, I've just never seen such a lack of humanity. There's a lot of people on the left I don't agree with, but I at least hear what they have to say.
Yeah, they don't want to hear what conservatives have to say. Now it's irrational. It's pathological, the hatred that they have for the president.
And what is it now? It's like we have liberals, we have socialists, we have never Trumpers. We have rhinos that are close to never Trumpers, but not really. They just want their money from lobbyists. And then we have, you know, the Freedom Caucus and conservatives. And that's it.
Yeah. I got to tell you, it's unbelievable. That's about who it is. And, you know, this idea that they're going to stop, I don't believe it. I hope Newt is right. I wish there's a very simple out for the special counsel now if he wants it. He could just submit questions to the president's attorney. They could write answers. And the investigation, as Mike Pence said today, wrap it up for the good of the country. Look what's going on around the world. Pay attention to what's going on around the world. You see, but they never thought, they all thought that Hillary was going to win. That's their big problem. That's their weakness. That was their Achilles heel in this. They, like the media, were blinded. They all thought it was done. It was in the bag. And what they don't like in the end, what they really don't like is that's why if the president is successful, everything we tell you about that he's successful on, that's bad news for them. That's bad news for the Democrats that want to win back the House so they can impeach Trump. That's bad. If the president makes peace, that's bad news for Democrats because the world's a safer place. How do we get to the point that your political ambition or your ambition for power transcends your love of the greatest gift of this country that God ever gave man. I mean, they have certainly lost all perspective. You know, we talk about prosecutorial discretion. You know, they used to say this during the Clinton impeachment years, where's the proportionality in all of this? Maybe in retrospect, there was some truth to that. All right, 800-941-SHAWN, a toll-free telephone number. Let's say hi to Alex in Michigan. Alex, how are you?
I'm great, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad you called.
And to throw this off to you, you're half my bucket list. Rush is the other half. Someday I'll get through to him.
Well, we got to expand that bucket list to, like, include Australia, you know, maybe a trip to Europe or something like that. By the way, I have a bucket list I'll never get to. I can tell you right now, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, I got a couple of them. Listen, the reason I'm calling is I want to say thank you to you and to Mark and to Rush and mostly to our president, which I absolutely adore. His ability to reach people that have been left out and forgotten for so long is amazing. And we can't give him a Nobel Peace Prize, but he has my heart, and I'm sure the hearts of many, many Americans. And if the elite don't understand why America is the greatest country in the world, it's because people like him are created by the American dream.
I don't think the Nobel Peace Prize Committee would ever be able to do the right thing and give him. Let's assume for a second. And again, this is not a done deal. I like to underpromise and overdeliver. Certainly things are looking good as it relates to North Korea. But let's say the president gets a deal done that leads to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. You know, it would be a no-brainer to give the president the Nobel Peace Prize. How much do you want to bet they would never give it to them? And you know what? It will show how petty and political they are. I mean, think about it. They gave Barack Obama the Nobel Peace. He hadn't done a thing, nothing. And in retrospect, he's made things, you know, infinitely worse, both in the economy and in foreign policy. We're cleaning up his mess every day.
Well, that's why I said, you know, we can't give him a peace prize, but we can give him our heart. And he has ours. We adore him. We honor him, and we thank him. And you and
oh, you're very like kind. That.
And you're the reason why America is the greatest country in the world. It's because people with more money than I will ever dream of having still remember what it is to be down here with the rest of us working for a living.
Let me put my life in perspective for you, okay? Just to give you. In the 1991-ish, I guess, or two, I was making in radio $19,000 a year. In 1996, I was making, I think, $50,000 a year in radio. That's it. When I went up to start the Fox News Channel and Roger Ailes hired me, people said, Fox what? Huh? Fox 5? Yeah, nobody knew. And I had people tell me my career is over. When I was vetting Obama, my career was over. When I said that Trump could win, my career was, that my obituary was written 1,000 times. You know, people telling me now, wow, you're really going after these guys. I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. I dig deep for the truth, and we do news and information that you don't do elsewhere. I never got into this for any other reason. And by the way, let me give another little perspective about life. Now, do you own a house, Alex? Do you rent or do you own a house?
I own a house. I work very hard,
okay.
But I own it.
Here is a simple truth that I think very few people will ever really, they don't, we take pride in home ownership. I remember when I bought my first house in Atlanta for $123,000. I was so excited. It was like the best day of my life. But here's the thing. You don't really own that house, because when you die, and we're all going to die, somebody else is going to live in that house, and it ain't going to be you. So you really, all of us rent. It's just a fact. And we all pay rent because we pay taxes on it. So just a little perspective. But I'll say one last thing. We are all spokes in a wheel. Your voice, every listener's voice, every viewer's voice. We're all playing a part in this. Because if you don't support Rush, Mark, me, Fox News, that voice dies. And there are a lot of people that would like to silence all of us because of the work we've been doing. Just so you know. And they don't want Donald Trump to succeed, which is sad. God bless you, Alex. Thank you for being with us. All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Amazing news all over the place. And your corrupt media, oh, they don't cover it. All right, we got the great one, Mark Levin. He's going to break down what the judge did last Friday. And now the heat is on Robert Mueller. Sarah Carter's breaking news about Comey and Mueller collusion. Also, Greg Jarrett, Sebastian Gorka, Joe Concha, Dan Bongino, David Limbaugh, Daniel Hoffman, and Jesse and Jessica. All coming up, Hannity, tonight at 9.